headphones flaring. Alone in his own zone, cold and he don't care. He's a problem child. What bothers him all comes out when he talks about his dad walking out. Cause he hates him so bad that he blocks him out. If he ever saw him again, he'd probably knock him out. His thoughts are whack, he's mad, so he's talking back. Talking black, brainwashed from rock and rap. He sacked his pants, blue rags, and a stocking cap. His stepfather hit him, so he socked him back and broke his nose. His house is a broken home. There's no control, he just lets his emotions go.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained. They rode us all the way into New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Mechanics and flight attendants at Northwest Airlines are being warned not to hold informational pickets scheduled next week at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport or risk being fired. Members of the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association and Professional Flight Attendants Association plan to picket July 2nd. It was to be a show of protest against the company's growing practice of outsourcing aircraft maintenance to overseas contractors. Such a move, say the unions, presents a security risk. The airline responded with a letter saying any pickets with such a theme would be, quote, highly damaging to Northwest's business, unquote. More than a third of the maintenance on Northwest's fleet of planes is done in Singapore.
President Bush has been on the opposite side of labor unions on trade issues since his chief economic advisor endorsed the outsourcing of U.S. jobs overseas. And on Thursday, when Bush decided to sign another NAFTA-like free trade pact, President James Hoffa of the Teamsters Union had had enough, resigning from the White House Trade Advisory Panel. Hoffa blasted the panel as a, quote, sham process that only isolates the U.S. from Latin American allies.
New tensions between American and Canadian union members. This week, office workers in Canada declared their intent to set up their own union separate from the U.S.-based Office and Professional Employees International Union, with which they had been previously affiliated. The OPEIU, facing the loss of some 34,000 members, filed suit against the Canadians in a Florida court trying to stop the breakaway. This follows allegations of poaching made by the Canadian auto workers after the Detroit-based United Auto Workers opened up organizing drives at Canadian auto plants earlier this year.
With the help of federal mediators, negotiations are spinning again for striking Maytag workers in Des Moines following a two-week break. The United Auto Workers represents more than 1,500 home appliance manufacturing workers and says it won't resume production unless a new three-year contract protects employees' health care insurance and retirement benefits. Maytag responded to the strike by sending a letter to 700 previously laid off employees asking them if they wanted to come back to work.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Americans don't have to offshore jobs to lose them to competitors from other countries. A new report from the Pew Hispanic Center estimates that 29% of all new jobs created in the U.S. are going to non-U.S. citizens. This is a significant amount, especially since non-Americans currently make up less than 10% of the country's total workforce. Yet in general terms, wages earned by non-U.S. workers are slipping when compared to citizen workers, which suggests an element of exploitation at work.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Does George W. get up every morning and gargle with a big glass of political cynicism? Or is he genetically cynical and just can't help himself? Take his recent radio address on Memorial Day weekend. Bush wrapped himself as tightly as possible in the flag and blathered on at length about how much he loves those veterans who have gone to war and fought for our freedom, a noble stand that he personally avoided taking when his time came, using family connections to keep him safely out of harm's way. But that's another story. In his address, George told the nation that we can acknowledge the debt we owe these veterans by, quote, showing our respect and gratitude. I don't know if he gargled before delivering this radio sermon, but I do know that just hours before it, Bush's budget office announced that it would cut $1 billion out of existing veterans' health care programs next year if Bush gets elected this fall. There's gratitude for you. These programs have already been so shortchanged by Bush that his own Secretary of Veterans Affairs has criticized their inadequacy. At present, nearly 350,000 injured and ill vets are having to wait in line to get admitted for health care because the VA system is so backed up. The average wait is more than 6 months. Yet rather than cutting the backlog, as Bush promised to do when he took office, he now proposes to cut 540 VA staffers who review disability claims to speed up the line and help veterans get the care they need. This $1 billion cut comes on top of Bush's ongoing attempt to close veterans' hospitals all across the country, his $50 million cut in medical research on new prosthetic technologies for dismembered vets, and his cutting off of 164,000 veterans from their existing prescription drug coverage. This is Jim Hightower saying, veterans could use a little less rhetorical respect from the president and a whole lot more tangible support.
America is a country of entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner, you're helping shoulder the lion's share of the U.S. economy. You can lighten that load a little by joining Sam's Club. Sam Walton created Sam's Club to give small business owners the purchasing power of big businesses. So no matter what kind of business you own, when you shop at Sam's Club, you get everyday low costs on products you need every day. And you can rely on us to carry those products at low warehouse prices. To save you time, we offer click and pull and fax and pull, convenient services to help you order ahead for fast pickup. Place your order at samsclub.com or by fax before 5 p.m. and at no extra charge, it's ready to pick up the next morning. Now that's teamwork. And we'd like to be a small part of your team. After all, while you may be carrying around the weight of the American economy, you shouldn't have to do all the heavy lifting by yourself. Join the club, Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border, streaming into from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite system, on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast, beaming around the planet off WhiteRoseSociety.org and Cable Radio Network, channel number 4. Well, the mystery continues. We still don't know who was the senator. Who was the senator who booked the office building, the office room, at the coronation? Actually, it wasn't an office. It was a ballroom in the Dirksen Senate building, so that Danny K. Davis, the representative congressman from Illinois, could wear white gloves and carry a pillow holding a gold crown to put on the head of Reverend Moon, owner of United Press International and the Washington Times, the guy who bailed out Jerry Falwell when he was nearly bankrupt a few years back. Big, big friend of the conservatives in Washington, D.C. As Reverend Moon declared himself, and I quote, humanity's Savior, Messiah, returning Lord, and true parent. And in order to get that office building, where a whole bunch of different members of Congress showed up for this thing, thinking that it was, apparently, some of them felt duped because it was put on by the Washington Times, I guess. I thought everybody knew that the Washington Times was a Mooney paper. Well, you know, the fact that it's the only paper that they read in the White House, well, you know, that doesn't seem to matter much, or the fact that... Anyway, the mystery continues. Maybe we had to offer a reward. That would be an interesting one. By the way, it's Friday, and the first hour of our program on Friday is our Brunch with Bernie segment, Congressman Bernie Sanders. Bernie's going to be calling in sometime in the next 5 or 10 minutes, most likely. He's down on the floor of the House of Representatives right now, trying to get something added to the energy bill, renewables added to the energy bill. So he is doing our business, the people's business. And so we'll hear from him as soon as he has an opportunity to get back with us. In the meantime, if there's anything you want to talk about, you're more than welcome to call 1-866-889-8894. And I know, of course, when Bernie gets on, that he loves to hear from our listeners. And in our first hour here, our serious listeners can hear us live as well. And so if there's anything you want to talk about today, feel free to call. It's Friday, you know, we can just take it easy. Today, former chairman, well, actually it was yesterday, but the former chairman of the Chrysler Corporation, Lee Iacocca, who in the 2000 election not only endorsed George W. Bush, but aggressively campaigned for him, particularly in the state of Michigan, where Iacocca lives, and was featured on TV commercials for George W. Bush around Michigan. And, I find that fascinating that he has, and you know, he gave money to Bush, he voted for Bush in 2000, and he campaigned aggressively for him. And, I mean, you know, talk about American, you know, the American corporate elite, Lee Iacocca. Of course, right now, I suppose he doesn't have any dog in the fight. He's retired. He's a retired multimillionaire ex-CEO of Chrysler. But, you know, well-known guy, famous guy, some would say some very good work with Chrysler, although Chrysler now is no longer an American-owned company. I mean, this is what happens right up until the Reagan Revolution. From 1776 until about 1983, the United States owned more assets around the world than were owned by foreign countries within the United States. We were a net owner of others in the world rather than others being a net owner of us. And now the trend, well, since the Reagan Revolution, the trend has dramatically reversed, as we've been documenting on this program. Not just this goes way beyond the outsourcing of America. This is the direct consequence of the trade policies that Reagan put into place, that George H.W. Bush promoted, that Bill Clinton got signed, I mean, you know, got really, really rolling by signing GATT, and which led to the WTO and NAFTA, and which George W. Bush now is so aggressively promoting with his Commerce Department and all this. So anyhow, here we have Lee Iacocca supporting John Kerry. He notes that George Bush faces the worst jobs record of any president who has run for re-election in nearly 60 years. And while American jobs have been shipped to countries overseas, the Bush administration has stood by, even praising the benefits of outsourcing. Jobs that are being created pay significantly less than the jobs we have lost. So, interesting. Fascinating stuff. I got an email the other day from somebody who'd actually been to a speech that John Kerry gave and was just incredibly impressed. I'm looking forward to an opportunity for the same thing. And I am told that Congressman Sanders is on the line. Well, hey, Bernie, are you there?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I am great. So glad to have you here. Let me just do your quick bio here. In 1991, Congressman Bernie Sanders became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years to the House of Representatives. He's since been reelected 5 times, the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. I think of you as America's representative, Bernie, and it's so nice that our callers can always call.
I appreciate that, and
they can always call you and get a straight story because I mean, you know, you're not a Democrat, you're not a Republican, you're just there representing.
Under difficult circumstances.
Yeah, right. You were just down on the floor of the House.
I am on the floor of the House right now, actually, just in the cloakroom on the side. And the reason I'm late is we just offered an amendment, which I don't know how much success we will have, but it's one I'm sure that most of your listeners will support, and that is the need to move the country away from fossil fuels and nuclear power to sustainable energy.
Yeah.
So we have an amendment in the Energy and Water Bill for $30 million more for sustainable energy, taking that money out of nuclear weapons research. So.
You think it's going to happen?
Probably not, but we got a shot.
Yeah. Well,
the bells go off, I'm going to disappear on you and try to agitate a little bit for it.
But. Okay, that's fine. I understand. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, by the way. Peter in California is on the line. Hey, whoa. Hey, Bernie. Oh, rats. I forgot to push the VIP button, and I have lost Bernie. And Peter, are you there?
Yeah, now I can hear you, Tom.
Yow.
How's it coming through there, Tom?
There we go. We got some kind of funky thing here with his phone system.
You're on the radio than I can over the phone.
Yeah. I don't know what the deal is here. Hang on just a minute. Let me... That's not it. Peter, hold on just a second. This is there's something strange going on with our telephone system, and I don't know, maybe the cat was walking on the board. No, that wasn't it. Okay, we're going to bring Bernie back in. Bernie, are you there?
Hi, I'm sorry. We lost you there.
Yeah, that was my fault. I'm sorry. I had forgotten to push the right button. You're coming through fine. Let me see if I can bring Peter in here. I was getting funny feedback on him, and I'm not sure why. Peter, are you there?
Hi. Tom, I'm able to hear you and the congressman. How about,
okay.
Am I coming through?
Great, and you're coming through just fine. So whatever it was has been fixed. What's up, Peter?
Well, first of all, I would blame the Reverend Moon for our technical difficulties this morning. But I also wanted to point out that the Iacocca endorsement of Kerry is interesting on the energy subject, because in the last few years, Iacocca has been working to develop efficient electric vehicles, cars and bicycles.
Yeah.
And something that I don't think a lot of people know about, but it's one of the reasons that he has endorsed Kerry, trying to move us forward technologically instead of the kind of retrograde approach of the Bush administration.
Yeah, Bernie, before you came on, I had mentioned that Lee Iacocca has now endorsed John Kerry, and he had aggressively worked for George Bush, and that the mystery continues about who is the senator who signed up the ballroom in the Dirksen building for the coronation of Reverend Moon, wherein he declared himself the new Messiah.
And, I'd like to deal with both of those issues.
Yeah.
You know, Tom, what I think, there are many, many issues out there, and many of them are complicated and difficult, no doubt. But I think in terms of this movement to sustainable energy, we are at the cusp of being able to revolutionize how we produce energy in protecting the environment and creating decent-paying jobs and making sustainable energy cost-effective. This is no longer a utopian dream for 20 years down the pike. It's happening now.
Yeah.
You know that in some areas of the country, wind power is now substantially cheaper than nuclear power.
Well, and in some parts of the world, it's a major energy source.
Absolutely. It's the fastest growing source of energy in the world. And even in places like New England, solar power can be cost-effective. Can you imagine what we could do in terms of rates if the federal government not only put more money into research and development, but we started purchasing solar panels in terms of all of our public buildings?
Yeah.
What this would do in lowering the cost of production. So it's sitting there, and it is frustrating that we're not moving faster, and certainly, as is the case in almost every other issue, the Bush administration is on the wrong side.
Yeah, and it seems like you said taking $60 million, $30
million? This is only $30
million. $30
million. Which is, you know, it's a pittance, but
yeah.
It's what we thought politically perhaps achievable today.
Yeah, or at least a gesture. Peter's still on the line. Peter, you sounded suspiciously like Peter B. Collins, the famous talk show host out there in California. Are you?
Indeed, Tom. I'm up early and listening to you this morning.
Hey.
We're on our way to a mid-morning showing of Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11.
Louise and I are going to see that tonight. Peter, did you have? It's great to hear from you. I've been on your show, and it's great to have you here on my program. Peter B. Collins' program is also carried on KGOE in the afternoon after a few hours after our show in Eureka, California. There, and I've been out on the web, and what I'm not sure where else we intersect, but I know about that one. Did you have a question for Congressman Sanders before we move along, Peter?
Yeah, I'd just like to bring up one other issue. The court in Philadelphia dealt a minor victory to those of us who want to try to challenge further corporate control of the electronic media in this country. And at the same time this week, the Senate did push through the Dorgan Amendment, which mm-hmm. would roll back the FCC's relaxation mm-hmm. of the ownership rules from last year. I want to know if the congressman has any sense of hope or confidence that this is beginning of a process that will build momentum to support low-power FM and put more media voices in the hands of individuals instead of corporations.
Well, very good question, Peter, on a hugely important issue. And as Peter indicated, a federal court in Philadelphia, in a sense, overturned what the FCC has done, and they're not going to be able to go forward with their new regulations, which would allow for more media deregulation and the ownership of what we read, see, and hear by a smaller number of large corporations.
Yeah.
So it's a very good step.
Bernie, we got to take a break here, but if you could just hold that thought. And, Peter, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate that. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Congressman Bernie Sanders, Brunch with Bernie, 20 minutes after the hour. Friday, the 25th of June. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers. Old with tech support?
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
When I think about getting older, it's not dying I worry about, it's living and being buried under a pile of medical bills I can't pay for.
Healthcare costs are soaring. Millions more Americans are uninsured, and those who have coverage are paying more out of pocket. Yet President Bush offers no plan to curb costs, and his new Medicare law would actually ban the government from negotiating lower prices from drug companies.
The cost of these drugs, it's very scary.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
For your rights. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here with you on the Brunch with Bernie segment of our program. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. And Congressman Sanders, you were answering the question that was raised by one of America's best progressive talk show hosts, Peter B. Collins, out in California. If I may interrupt that process, because I hopefully we'll have a little more time here. We have Derek on the line, and he's one of our serious listeners, and he's calling on a cell phone traveling through New Hampshire. And so I'd like to just hop to him real quick, if that's all right with you.
Sure.
Okay, Derek, you're live and on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I had a quick question for the senator. Is it true that the vice president used a FCC banned word on the Senate floor yesterday? And if so, what's your take on that?
Well, I wasn't there, but my understanding is that the vice president appeared to be a bit agitated, and what witnesses seem to say is that he used a four-letter word beginning with F to the senior senator from the state of Vermont. That is my understanding.
Yeah. In fact, apparently it's been verified by Pat Leahy that Dick Cheney did tell him to go F himself. You know, that's so. Derek, thanks for the call. And this is not illegal, right? I mean, obscenity.
Well, technically it is. You're not allowed to use profanity, but their arguing is that the Senate at that moment was not legally in session.
Yeah.
So that it was not a violation of Senate rules.
Interesting. Okay, your thoughts on the issues that Peter Collins raised.
Well, Tom, as you and I have discussed, and I know many of our listeners are concerned about, the issue of corporate control over the media is one of the very, very major issues facing our country. And if you're concerned about workers' rights or the economic status of the middle class or the environment or women's rights or the war in Iraq, for that matter, or almost anything else that you can think of, you have got to be concerned about media and the fact that increasingly fewer and fewer large media conglomerates provide the information that the American people see, hear, and read. It is a hugely important problem. Now, the good news is, as I mentioned a moment ago, is federal court in Philadelphia just put a stay on the implementation of these rules. That will give those of us in Congress an opportunity not only to try to stop or go further in trying to stop the implementation of these rules, and as you mentioned, the Senate has done the right thing. We're trying to get a vote on the House floor, which the Speaker will not allow us, by the way. We've got over 200 signatures on a letter requesting that vote. But more importantly, we've got to go forward now in a positive way, not only stopping the FCC, but figuring out how we can create democratic media in America where different points of view are heard, where media and news is more than sensationalism and 10-second sound bites, but serious discussion from different points of view about the major issues facing our country. And we need a lot of help on that.
Yeah.
Not easy stuff. I would mention, even with regard to public television, you may be aware, Tom, that the Bush administration managed to push through two conservative shows on public television at the same time as they're cutting back on the Bill Moyer show.
Yeah.
So it's a huge issue, and the Bush administration, very political, they know the importance of media, and they want to make sure that alternative points of view are really not being heard by the American people.
Yeah, and the trick is to do it in a way that doesn't end up, I mean, you know, George Washington kind of warned us. He said government is like fire. It can be a faithful servant or it can be a terrible, destructive force. To do it in a way that is that doesn't end up with a situation like we have right now, for example, where the Bush administration is swinging, you know, they're getting Michael Medved and some other right winger on public television, where they're actually influencing the programming. I mean, the whole idea of public television was for it to be independent of any administration, and that's going to be the tough one. That's going to be the real challenge, I think.
And that's what I would like people to think about. We believe in the First Amendment. I have no problems with the Rush Limbaughs and the Sean Hannitys of the world, but what I want is the opportunity for other points of view to be heard in an equal amount of time, and that's certainly not the case right now.
Yeah, and it's an in-depth discussion, really. It really raises a lot of good issues. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment, the only independent member of Congress, America's congressman, in my opinion. Our number is 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to call in, stay tuned. We will be right back. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Mechanics and flight attendants at Northwest Airlines are being warned not to hold informational pickets scheduled next week at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport or risk being fired. Members of the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association and Professional Flight Attendants Association plan to picket July 2nd. It was to be a show of protest against the company's growing practice of outsourcing aircraft maintenance to overseas contractors. Such a move, say the unions, presents a security risk. The airline responded with a letter saying any pickets with such a theme would be, quote, highly damaging to Northwest's business, unquote. More than a third of the maintenance on Northwest's fleet of planes is done in Singapore.
President Bush has been on the opposite side of labor unions on trade issues since his chief economic advisor endorsed the outsourcing of U.S. jobs overseas. And on Thursday, when Bush decided to sign another NAFTA-like free trade pact, President James Hoffa of the Teamsters Union had had enough, resigning from the White House Trade Advisory Panel. Hoffa blasted the panel as a, quote, sham process that only isolates the U.S. from Latin American allies.
New tensions between American and Canadian union members. This week, office workers in Canada declared their intent to set up their own union separate from the U.S.-based Office and Professional Employees International Union, with which they had been previously affiliated. The OPEIU, facing the loss of some 34,000 members, filed suit against the Canadians in a Florida court trying to stop the breakaway. This follows allegations of poaching made by the Canadian auto workers after the Detroit-based United Auto Workers opened up organizing drives at Canadian auto plants earlier this year.
With the help of federal mediators, negotiations are spinning again for striking Maytag workers in Des Moines following a two-week break. The United Auto Workers represents more than 1,500 home appliance manufacturing workers and says it won't resume production unless a new three-year contract protects employees' health care insurance and retirement benefits. Maytag responded to the strike by sending a letter to 700 previously laid-off employees asking them if they wanted to come back to work.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Americans don't have to offshore jobs to lose them to competitors from other countries. A new report from the Pew Hispanic Center estimates that 29% of all new jobs created in the U.S. are going to non-U.S. citizens. This is a significant amount, especially since non-Americans currently make up less than 10% of the country's total workforce. Yet in general terms, wages earned by non-U.S. workers are slipping when compared to citizen workers, which suggests an element of exploitation at work.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Working hard to make a living, bring a shelter from the rain. My father's son left to carry on blue denim in his vein.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, along with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, Friday afternoon, the 25th of June, 2004, 130 days to the elections. And Congressman Sanders, we have a couple of callers on the line. Shall we move right along to them?
Let's do it.
Okay. 1-866-889-8894, our toll-free number if you'd like to be on the program. Dave in Humboldt County is on the line. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Gentlemen, I pay much attention and appreciate your efforts. I have certainly drawn the conclusion that we presently have the most corrupt federal government imaginable, ripped off our treasury unmercifully and our Social Security and everything. I listen to all the investigative committees and I wait for the Democrats to ask the tough questions. Recently, I've been proud of a few of them, certainly Nancy Pelosi, and I'm wondering, though, why has none of them posed questions like, how did our whole sophisticated national defense go brain dead on 9/11? How did that happen? I think that's the kind of questions that need to be posed because it's...
Okay. Interesting one, Dave. What do you think, Congressman Sanders?
Well, I think Dave is right, and I think there has been an effort. Whether people could have been more aggressive, I think, is probably true. But I think there is a growing understanding that for a variety of reasons, we were not only from an intelligence point of view unprepared, or not as prepared as we should have been for the kind of attack that took place on 9/11, but even after the attack took place, there's no question, according to a number of people who testified, that we were unable to respond as quickly as possible. The answer to Dave's question is yes, there's a lot to be learned from that, and we've got to be much more aggressive in making sure that this country is prepared to deal, to stop terrorism, and to be effective in responding to it.
Bernie, as I'm sure you know, Congressman Warren Rudman and former Congressman Gary Hart headed up the Hart-Rudman Commission, looking into these very kinds of issues, issued a report, as I recall, just before 9/11, essentially warning that this was going to happen. Or something like it. And Senator Rudman recently said that he was of the opinion that it would take about 84, as I recall, maybe it was 86, it was in the 80s anyway, $84 billion investment immediately within the United States in internal infrastructure to, enhancing the abilities of police and fire departments, first responders, things like that, in order to really make them, and also securing things like chemical facilities and nuclear plants and whatnot.
Ports as well.
And our ports, yeah, in order to make America secure. And yet the Bush administration has only asked for some $30 billion, apparently, for Homeland Security, so that they can pay for Iraq or something. I mean, what's going on with this?
Well, here's the problem that the Bush administration has on it. And actually, it was just an amendment on the floor where the Democrats had to maneuver hard to get a good amendment on it. Essentially, what the amendment said is that we would kill the tax breaks, the future tax breaks that would go to the people earning $1 million a year more, and that money would be used for a Homeland Security, education, veterans' needs, and so forth and so on. So there was an effort to just make the point that you're making, Tom, that we need more money for effective Homeland Security. The Bush administration's problem is that we have a huge deficit, we have a huge national debt, and a significant reason for the growth of the deficit and the national debt is the massive giveaways that the Bush administration has provided for the wealthiest people in this country. So if the choice comes down to a strong homeland defense, making sure that we are as effective as we can be in stopping another terrorist attack, or giving tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires, well, the Bush administration has made their choice, and we're not as well protected as we should be.
Yeah, and it's not just tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires. It's tax breaks and huge grants and giveaways to huge multinational corporations.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a whole other issue, and I'm glad you're raising that, because it's not just lowering the tax rates for the wealthy and so forth and doing away with the estate tax and all that stuff. It is billions and billions and billions of dollars that go to companies like General Electric, Boeing, General Motors, and companies that then say thank you to the American people for this corporate welfare. We're off to China.
Yeah.
And that is an outrage, but you're right to make that point.
Yeah, socialism is just fine for them. They
Right, exactly.
1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to be on the air with Congressman Bernie Sanders, the Tom Hartman program here. Paul in Florida is on the line. Hey, Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Bernie?
Yes.
You remember the movie The Shawshank Redemption?
I do. I saw that.
Hello?
Yeah, right here.
Yeah, you remember that movie?
Yes, I do.
It was Dick Cheney, the warden.
That actor looked a little like Cheney, that's right. Yeah.
I have to say, I didn't see the movie.
It was a very good movie.
What's the point, Paul?
I think the actor who was playing the warden looked a little bit like Cheney, and I think maybe the caller is suggesting that he acts a little bit like Cheney.
Okay. I'll have to rent the movie. Paul has dropped off the line here. I'll have to rent that movie and check it out. If you'd like to be on
the... Needless to say, the warden was not a nice guy in the movie.
I see. Okay. Yeah, interesting. The Shawshank Redemption. That's 10, 15 years ago, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's been some time. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to call in. The lines are open. And what's on your plate this week or this month? Or, you know, what do you think is hot here, Bernie? What's going on in Congress?
I think, you know, sometimes what's hot is not what's hot. It's the same old stuff. And that is the most important thing that I think progressives can do right now is to do everything that we can to change the political culture in this country. And what I mean by that, Tom, is that people can, if they're concerned about the Bush administration, which in my view is the most reactionary administration in the modern history of this country, if they're concerned about the collapse of the middle class, if they're concerned about the fact that our health care system is disintegrating, we're the only country in the world without a national health care program, if they're concerned about the growing gap between the rich and the poor, and all of the other issues that I know you discuss so intelligently on your program, you know what? Folks are going to have to stop talking to each other and do things that they have not done before and that they may be uncomfortable about doing, and that is going out and talking to other people. It is not really too much to ask to say that in the 4 months between today and the election, register 5 or 10 people to vote. Make sure that those people come out to vote. Call up people who you feel comfortable about working with politically. Get on the telephone. Knock on doors. Distribute good literature. Do something that you haven't done before to raise political consciousness in this country. Very clearly, I mean, you hear every day from the Bush administration about a lot of things, but you don't hear them saying to low-income people, to young people, to working people, come out and vote, that there's something wrong with the United States having the lowest voter turnout of any major country on earth. You don't hear them talking about that too much, Tom, do you?
Yeah, no, you don't. And I submitted a piece today to Common Dreams. We'll see if they run it. Essentially, suggesting that Ralph Nader is being disingenuous when he says, you know, if Germany can have a third party, why can't we? You know, because they have proportional representation and we don't. And suggesting that we need to and get your thoughts on this, although we've got...
Well, let me say a word about Nader.
Sure.
I've known Nader for many, many years, and I am an independent. I am not a Democrat. And if people want to talk about the weaknesses of the Democratic Party, believe me, we can talk about it till the cows come home. No question about that. But this is, in my view, not an election about John Kerry. It is not an election. John Kerry is a moderate Democrat. He is not more than that. He is not less than that. He has voted, in my view, wrong on some major issues. He's played a good role in some other issues. I don't think John Kerry is going to change the world, and I think the day after the election, if Kerry is elected, Tom, you and me and a few million other people are going to have to do everything that we can to push him in a progressive direction, okay?
Yeah.
That's the simple truth, and I don't want to say otherwise.
Sure.
But let me also say that I want listeners to know that if George Bush is reelected, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Oh, yeah.
If you think that the last 4 years have been reactionary, if you're worried about civil liberties in this country through the Patriot Act, if you're worried about the privatization of Social Security and Medicare and the underfunding of Medicaid and the Veterans Administration, if you're concerned that this administration has the worst environmental record in modern history, you ain't seen nothing yet, because if Bush wins this election, he does not have to come before the people again. He can do anything he wants. And I am, needless to say, not happy about Nader's candidacy. I happen to agree with him probably a lot more than I do with John Kerry on the issues. But there is a time and place for for everything. I've run as a third-party candidate. I've taken on Democrats. I've taken on Republicans. I've supported other people who have done the same. There are good people all over America who are running in various capacities, you know, whether it's for lieutenant governor, whatever it may be, number of positions out there.
Yeah.
But at this particular moment in history, now is not the appropriate time to divide the vote against George Bush.
Yeah.
I believe in third parties.
Yeah.
But you've got to use common sense. And working to, in effect, elect George Bush is very wrong.
Yeah, and we need to bring about instant runoff voting so we can have a more democratic
system. That's exactly correct.
Let's go to the phone lines. They're all lit up here. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Charles in Albany, New York is on the line. Hey, Charles, welcome to the program.
Thank you, and I also thank the congressman for being available as well. I wanted to hear Bernie's perspective on whether or not the Republicans were being hypocritical on their prescription drug plan by stating a value that the government would pay for a certain drug even when the generic is actually created. When the generic is created and therefore the patent over that medication is no longer there, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
In other words, they're saying they'll still pay for the brand name even if there's a generic available with our tax dollars. Good question.
Let me just say to Charles, I've been very active in this prescription drug issue and one of the leaders in the country on that and fighting against the absurdity of Americans being forced to pay many times more for the same exact medicine made by the same exact company than our friends in Canada or Europe and elsewhere to pay. I think when we talk about prescription drugs, one should understand that the pharmaceutical industry is the most powerful industry in the United States of America, stronger than the oil industry, stronger than the health insurance industry. They have spent hundreds of millions of dollars to make sure that in the last couple of years, to make sure that we pay the highest prices in the world. They have hundreds. It was just a study that came out from Public Citizen, which, by the way, people can get off of my website, which is bernie.house.gov. Beautiful, very good study by Public Citizen pointing out just the hundreds and hundreds of lobbyists that the pharmaceutical industry has. The answer to the question is the Bush administration is working in cahoots with the industry. Their only goal is to make sure that the industry earns more and more profits. They could care less about the taxpayers or about the people who need affordable prescription drugs.
Yeah, and that becomes the bottom line. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Dave in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program. You're on with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hi, thank you. I had a question, and it had to do with a story that was in the news this morning. I didn't get all the shows, so I'm sorry if you've already addressed this, but I wonder what Dick Cheney said to Senator Leahy during their photo op is playing internal into the halls of Congress, because you guys try to be very courteous to each other, and this didn't look like it was a very courteous statement that Dick Cheney said to Senator Leahy. I wonder how members of Congress feel about it.
Okay.
Well, there is in fact a lot of I was having dinner with a bunch of people last night after this thing hit the news, and there was a lot of discussion about it, and I think what it tells us a couple of things. I mean, it suggests that some of our right-wing friends who profess to be very religious and very caring and very sensitive, underneath that surface, may not quite be that way. And it also tells us that the Bush administration and Bush and Cheney are feeling a lot of pressure now. They're seeing poll numbers which go down. They're seeing a lot of the lies that they've been talking for years being exposed, and they're stressed out. But I think the caller is right in saying around here, at least there's a lot of false friendliness, that everybody's an honorable gentleman or an honorable lady, and everybody loves each other while they're stabbing each other in the back 5 minutes later. But that was, a very unusual statement, which does not speak well for the vice president, certainly does not do him or his party much good.
Yeah, although in Bob Woodward's first book, Bush at War, I mean, he made the comment, I believe it was in that book, that that George Bush himself, in discussions that are off the record, you know, when he's just talking with people or even when he's talking with his cabinet sometimes, you know, every other sentence has the F word in it or the GD word in it or whatever, that he really
kind of has
a body
model. Well, people, I must confess that I've been known to use that word once or twice myself.
Okay.
One doesn't...
None of us are perfect.
Yeah, but one doesn't have the pretense, you know, of being holier than thou.
Yeah.
So I think that exposed a little bit of that.
Okay, let's go to Chuck in Santa Fe and see what he has to... What's on his mind. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Hey, listen, I used to teach neuroscience at a medical school. And it's very interesting to me to watch the way this whole medicine's going. I don't do it anymore, but from a sort of a previous professional point of view. And the interesting thing is we treat everything, including old age, pregnancy, chronic diseases, like it's a trauma where we just cut somebody out from under a bus. And it's amazing. It's no wonder it costs so much, because that kind of trauma medicine is incredibly expensive.
In other words, we have a sickness care system rather than a wellness care system.
We have a sickness care system, and somebody's got to do something about it. And I think, you know, maybe we have just through, I don't know what you want to call it, through, you know, media perception, through advertising, whatever, convinced everybody that they ought to all feel like they're 20 years old again. And that ain't going to happen.
Yeah, Chuck.
Well, let me just respond. Chuck makes a very good point. I don't watch commercial TV all that much. Sometimes I do. It's amazing. When I watch it, what was I watching? I think I was watching 60 Minutes recently. Every ad is from the pharmaceutical industry, telling you to go running to your doctor, telling you need this or that medicine.
I have a question for you about that, Bernie, and let's pick that up right after this break. But about those ads, I'm wondering what percentage of those ads are actually to sell product versus what percentage of those ads are to influence that very media, not to criticize that industry. But we'll get into that right after this. This is Tom Hartman with Bernie Sanders.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down, and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new.
and you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
A new study finds that gene-altered crops can contaminate wild plants much faster than previously thought. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Many agricultural crops now contain modified genes. Some have been made resistant to weed killers. Others manufacture their own insecticides. These genetic modifications make crops more durable and productive. But Ralph Haygood, a researcher at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, says some people think designer genes can spread beyond farm fields.
People are worried that if you have a crop growing near a wild plant that is a closely related species, then pollen from the crop, or possibly seeds, could be transferred to the area where the wild plants are growing, and the result could be plants that are hybrids between the crop and the wild species.
If wild plants pick up a gene that makes them resistant to pesticides, Haygood says these hybrids might turn into superweeds. Haygood studied the probability that modified genes could escape into wild plants in spite of efforts to contain them. He found that it's likely to happen sooner than most experts thought.
There's substantial probability of escape well in advance of the average or expected escape time. And that means thinking about the process in terms of the average time isn't good enough. Also, if the crop is widely cultivated so that many wild populations are exposed to pollen or seed flow from it, that further reduces the average escape time and further increases the probability of escape well before the average escape time.
Haygood says his study shows that strategies to keep modified genes on the farm and out of nature need to be improved. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman. Brunch with Bernie, our segment with Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's independent congressman. Bernie, in the 3 minutes we have left here, just this quick question, and I'd like your thoughts on it, and also what we can do about it. I noticed when ADM was involved in those big scandals, they paid a huge fine for price fixing some years ago. They suddenly started supporting National Public Radio, and I haven't heard a single investigative report out of public radio about the agriculture scandals since then. I notice on TV now ads for Boeing and for companies that make weapons systems. Well, I'm not going to buy a jumbo jet. Right. I mean, it's, you know, right. Oil companies about their right. Drilling platforms. I'm not going to buy a drilling platform. And then, of course, there's all these drug company ads. We learned yesterday that the drug companies spend twice as much on marketing as they do on R&D. They spend twice as much telling us about their R&D than they do on their R&D.
Right.
And I'm just wondering to what extent, in your experience, I mean, you're right there, you talk, you know some of these guys who are the lobbyists and whatnot in the industry. To what extent do you think that they're really trying to influence the media itself versus us viewers?
Well, I think you make an excellent point, and I think you're right. In terms of the drug companies, though, don't underestimate the economic impact it has on them when they advertise their drugs.
Yeah.
So for them, telling people to go run out to their doctors and tell their doctors they desperately need this medicine in fact works, what studies seem to indicate is the sales of those particular drugs that are advertised do go up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your other point is also well taken, and that is if anyone thinks that massive amounts of advertising on networks and stations doesn't have an impact on what those stations will discuss and not discuss, you're absolutely correct. Of course it does. What we know also about the drug companies is they make huge contributions to all kinds of organizations, including organizations that are concerned about a particular illness. And the reason they do that is then when they are in trouble or they need help, they send out a letter and says, well, you know, our effort in the drug companies is supported by the Friends of Diabetes or the Friends of Cancer or whatever it may be. And what they do is they get themselves well situated by contributing to all kinds of organizations, and they call upon those organizations for help when they need it. In addition to that, of course, they set up some phony organizations, which are 100% funded by the drug companies.
Yeah, so this is influencing both the grassroots and at the highest levels.
Yes, it really is.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Congressman Sanders, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. See you again next week.
Okay, thanks, Bernie. Bye-bye. Congressman Bernie Sanders there with us. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Mechanics and flight attendants at Northwest Airlines are being warned not to hold informational pickets scheduled next week at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport or risk being fired. Members of the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association and Professional Flight Attendants Association planned to picket July 2nd. It was to be a show of protest against the company's growing practice of outsourcing aircraft maintenance to overseas contractors. Such a move, say the unions, presents a security risk. The airline responded with a letter saying any pickets with such a theme would be, quote, highly damaging to Northwest's business, unquote. More than a third of the maintenance on Northwest's fleet of planes is done in Singapore.
President Bush has been on the opposite side of labor unions on trade issues since his chief economic advisor endorsed the outsourcing of U.S. jobs overseas. And on Thursday, when Bush decided to sign another NAFTA-like free trade pact, President James Hoffa of the Teamsters Union had had enough, resigning from the White House Trade Advisory Panel. Hoffa blasted the panel as a, quote, sham process that only isolates the U.S. from Latin American allies.
New tensions between American and Canadian union members. This week, office workers in Canada declared their intent to set up their own union, separate from the U.S.-based Office and Professional Employees International Union, with which they had been previously affiliated. The OPEIU, facing the loss of some 34,000 members, filed suit against the Canadians in a Florida court trying to stop the breakaway. This follows allegations of poaching made by the Canadian auto workers after the Detroit-based United Auto Workers opened up organizing drives at Canadian auto plants earlier this year.
With the help of federal mediators, negotiations are spinning again for striking Maytag workers in Des Moines. Following a two-week break, the United Auto Workers represents more than 1,500 home appliance manufacturing workers and says it won't resume production unless a new three-year contract protects employees' health care insurance and retirement benefits. Maytag responded to the strike by sending a letter to 700 previously laid off employees asking them if they wanted to come back to work.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. Americans don't have to offshore jobs to lose them to competitors from other countries. A new report from the Pew Hispanic Center estimates that 29% of all new jobs created in the U.S. are going to non-U.S. citizens. This is a significant amount, especially since non-Americans currently make up less than 10% of the country's total workforce. Yet, in general terms, wages earned by non-U.S. workers are slipping when compared to citizen workers, which suggests an element of exploitation at work.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Hoist a glass of cheer for Percy Schmeiser. Percy's a family farmer who raises grain in Saskatchewan, Canada. But in the last several years, his main crop has been raising hell against the brutish tactics of Monsanto. This multi-billion dollar global pusher of genetically manipulated Frankenfoods went after Percy with all of its corporate might, unleashing the hounds of hell from its legal department. Schmeiser raises canola, saving the seeds from one year's crop to plant a new crop the next year, as farmers worldwide have done for ages. But in 1997, Monsanto's hired spies found that some of the corporation's patented, genetically altered canola plants were in Percy's fields, and their seed had been replanted. So this giant sued him, branded him a thief, demanded his profits, and sought damages, penalties, fees, and court costs from the poor guy. Yet, Percy had not planted Monsanto's perverted seeds. Rather, his unadulterated crop had been contaminated by pollen from altered Monsanto plants that had drifted from other fields. He argued that Monsanto's patent was hardly valid in such a case, and that he owed nothing for the seeds he didn't know he had not wanted, and had gained no profit from. He valiantly fought a long and costly legal battle against this bully, and now Canada's Supreme Court has ruled. While a narrow majority said Monsanto's patent was valid, Percy won a big personal victory, for the court agreed that he had not profited, was not a thief, and owed not a penny to the corporation. Also, while the court ruled that Monsanto did have ownership to the altered plants that appeared in Percy's fields, this ruling is likely to bite the corporation on the butt. With ownership comes legal responsibility, and it opens the courthouse doors for farmers to sue Monsanto for contaminating their fields with its adulterated plants. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn more, go to PercySchmeiser.com.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
I am Gunnery Sergeant Arlie Ermey, United States Marine Corps. While our armed forces defend our freedom, their families shoulder household duties and emergencies alone. To help, the veterans of foreign wars and Vermont American brand Bits and Blades have created the Unmet Needs Program.
Rufus Forrest here, VFW Senior Administrator. Please support the Unmet Needs Program by purchasing Vermont American Bits and Blades. A portion of each purchase goes to help families.
Visit unmetneeds.com and buy Vermont American brand Bits and Blades. Thank you and Semper Fi. Hoorah!
The man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live. I am holding in my hand a document, one of the few. Dick Cheney won before the Supreme Court, you'll note. The right to keep secret who attended the Energy Committee meeting. See, as Vice President, Cheney really only has two legal jobs, according to the Constitution. One is to be the president of the Senate. That is to open and, to convene and close the Senate, to open the session, at the beginning of the year, close the session at the end of the year, and to be available to vote in the event of a tie, because there's an even number of senators. So the vice president is always the odd person who, numerically speaking, in Cheney's case, I guess you could say there's multiple meanings. But in any case, he's always the odd person to break the tie. And the second constitutional obligation of the vice president is to periodically inquire as to the health of the president. The health of the president. But George W. Bush gave Dick Cheney two jobs when he came into office. That's the official story. I mean, for those who think that George W. Bush is running the White House, there are some who think Dick Cheney's running the White House. But anyhow, setting that aside, one of those jobs was to chair a task force on terrorism. Dick Cheney was the chairman of the National Task Force on Terrorism. And he was also the chairman of the National Task Force to develop an energy policy for the United States of America. Well, the Energy Policy Task Force met a number of times, six or eight times as I recall, in the first year of 2001, in the early months of 2001, and produced a report suggesting that billions, literally tens of billions of dollars, in subsidies, accelerated depreciation, and outright grants be given to the oil industry, the nuclear industry, the coal industry, and the natural gas industry. And it makes virtually no reference at all to renewables. As Congressman Sanders said today, they're trying to get $30 million, right? This is an $18 billion energy bill. Nothing in it for renewables. And so when Judicial Watch, Larry Klayman, Judicial Watch, the conservative organization, very conservative guy, their motto is, because no man is above the law. This is the group that sued Bill Clinton over Jennifer Flowers and ultimately led to, put Ken Starr on that trail. Ken Starr started out, of course, the Whitewater and then this and that and the other thing and moving along. But anyhow, Judicial Watch and the Sierra Club got together and they sued Dick Cheney and they said, we'd like to know who showed up at these meetings that decided what the proposed legislation put before the Congress should be about how the people's money should be spent. Who showed up at these meetings that you, who were elected by we the people, held? Who showed up at these meetings to help determine the policy that would have tremendous influence over the future of the United States? And Dick Cheney said, I'm not going to tell you. Although we do know that no representatives of the alternative energy industry were invited and that no environmental organizations were invited, it was exclusively members of the oil, coal, gas, and nuclear industry. We know Kenny Boy Lay was there, for sure. But that's about it, just from people seeing him going into the media. But in any case, the other committee, of course, that Dick Cheney headed up, the Task Force on Terrorism and Counterterrorism, never met before 9/11. The energy meeting, the energy one, he was Johnny on the spot there with that. And I'm holding in my hands one of the few documents that was actually released from that task force as a result of a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit by Judicial Watch and the Sierra Club. Actually, I think this one was just by Judicial Watch. This was before they were asking who was there. They said, what were the discussions? And these were disclosed, six pieces of paper ended up coming out under the Freedom of Information Act before Cheney was able to put the screws on this thing and, screw it down, stop it. And this piece of paper I'm holding in my hand is titled, it goes along with another, which you can find on the Judicial Watch website, judicialwatch.org, a map of Iraq. Now, keep in mind, this was March 5th, 2001. This was 6 months before 9/11. Cheney had been in office for 2.5 months. And Bush, of course. There's a map of the country of Iraq with all of the oil fields and their various names. And 8 districts where drilling has not taken place along the border with Saudi Arabia that are numbered rather than named, and where there are estimates of what kind of oil might be there. But there's over 100 specific oil fields. And one piece of paper has a map of that, and the other is titled Foreign Suitors for Iraqi Oil Field Contracts as of 5 March 2001. And across the top, country, firm, Iraqi oil and gas projects, and comments or status. So, for example, Algeria, the firm Sonarak, is interested in the Touba oil field in Iraq, and they're also interested in Block 6 and 7, the areas that haven't been drilled. And under comments, it says that they're under discussion with Sonarich in Algeria. Australia, BHP Oil Company, is interested in the Halfaya oil field and in Block 6. Under Halfaya, it says discussions. Under Block 6, it says collecting data. Belgium's oil company, Petrofina, is interested in the Adab oil field in Iraq and Block 2. And with regard to Adab, there's technical economic studies going on. China's, and then in parentheses it says China's CNPC was awarded PSC. See, this is, you know, China, Germany, France, and Russia had contracts with Iraq to pump this oil. And this is one of those sites, it's noting parenthetically, China already has the contract for this well. But here on March 5th, 2001, Dick Cheney was meeting with oil industry executives in the United States and figuring out how to divide up the oil in Iraq. And they note that they're preparing to sell the Adab, or the output from the Adab oil field, to Belgium's Petrofina company, even though China has the contract. I find this fascinating. Canada, a whole bunch of companies, Ranger, Bow Canada, Alberta Energy, Can Oxy, Shovco, Res, Fiscondido, Talisman, IPC, and Pan Canadian, are interested respectively in Block 6, the Carmala oil field, the Hamrin oil field, an unidentified oil field, the Ratawi oil field in Block 5, the Ayan Azala oil field, the Ratawi oil field, the Hamrin oil field east of Baghdad, and the Adab oil field. And the comments are signed MOU with Baghdad, joint proposal with Czech Republic's Strasbourg, none, discussions, collecting data, advanced talks, service contract for advanced oil recovery, gas injection project in this aging field, and it goes on and on. What I read you is the top inch and a half of, you know, what is several pages. This first page just goes from Algeria to Italy, of dividing up the oil fields and selling off the oil fields of Iraq. This from a meeting held in Dick Cheney's office on the 5th of March, 2001. So these are issues that I think are of some concern. Moving beyond that, though, into the larger picture, I think that, you know, the big picture here is, what is the job of our government? What is Dick Cheney's job? Well, you know, I mean, obviously he's the president of the Senate and his job is to inquire about the health of the president periodically. But why do we have elected officials? Why do we have a government in the United States? What is the whole point of it? And this is where there was this radical difference, you know, this radical idea that was created in 1776, that the job of government was not to tell people how to live, was not to run their lives for them, was not to advocate for special interests and the powerful few, as we saw during the feudal age when the king's armies were used to defend the feudal lord's properties, that those were not the purposes of government, but rather the purpose of government was to create an environment and support life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, this pursuit of happiness thing is something that phrase had never before in the 6 or 7 or 8,000 year history of Western civilization, and as far as I can tell, in any other civilization, had never before appeared in the founding documents of a nation. And when you read Jefferson, you get it that what he was talking about there was that in order for democracy to work, there must be a majority of the people who have enough leisure time that they can participate in governance. So they have the spare time to pursue happiness and to participate in governance. And see, all through history before then, this had not been the case. There had been a small class of people who had the leisure time to participate in governance. That's the House of Lords, the hereditary House of Lords in England, for example. You know, the peerage system, inherited titles, and the inherited ability to rule, essentially. And Jefferson said, no, it should be among the people, and therefore there must be what Jefferson referred to as the plowman and the yeoman class. So plowman meaning basically farmers and workers, to use today's language. And that they must be able to actually pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. In other words, there must be a middle class in order for democracy to function. This is the core of what George Washington described as the liberal idea on which America was founded. And supporting and maintaining this in the mind of Jefferson was clearly one of the main missions of government. And, of course, protecting and defending it. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll get into more in more detail in just a second.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD, and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warming, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information, available in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 24 minutes past the hour. At everything, there's a time and a season. And now is the time for a return to democracy in the United States. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to participate. Let me just give you, share a very quick quote from Franklin Roosevelt's 1936 acceptance speech in Philadelphia for his second term speech before the Democratic Party. He said, "An old English judge once said, 'Necessitous men are not free men.'" Necessitous meaning hungry. And people who lack the necessities of life. "An old English judge once said, 'Necessitous men are not free men. Liberty requires opportunity to make a living, a decent living, according to the standard of the time, a living which gives man not only enough to live by, but something to live for.'" And I'd like to share a little bit more of that with you. But let's take a call first here. Go to the lines 1-866-889-8894. It's Rob in Newtown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Rob, what's up?
Tom, how you doing?
I'm great. Hey, it's Rob Call of OpEdNews.com.
What is the duty of government? Well, I think one of the main duties of the government is to protect the safety of the people.
Sure.
And the other day I got in an article from one of our contributors, how safe do you feel now? With the basic idea, Reagan did the thing, is your economics better now or worse now than it was before? I think safety is the big issue that Bush has been putting, and I think we can do some jujitsu with it. And this whole, are you feeling safer now than you did 4 years ago?
Yeah.
And
the Republicans will just try and blame it on Clinton. I mean, that's just, whenever you bring up that issue, they'll go, well, you know, 9/11 happened because of Clinton.
Well, it's not just safety about terrorism. First of all, they tried to trick us on that. They're going to say that it was a mistake and maybe it was just incompetence. It's just like Gore said, is it incompetence or is it just they're liars? You know, and it seems to be a pattern, incompetent or liar. But it's not just there. It's, do you feel safer about your retirement? Do you feel safer about your health care? Do you feel safer about the education system. I think in all of these, Bush is just crashing down all over the place. The Republicans, because they're handing everything to the corporations, they're not taking care of the people anymore. They're not the first choice. International corporations that have no loyalty to anyone are the organizations that the Republicans are taking care of.
So you think the main theme of the Kerry campaign for this year should be, do you feel safer now than you did 4 years ago? Not just in terms of safety from terrorism, but safer in terms of health care, in terms of retirement, in terms of job security, in terms of the ability of your children to get an education and have a safe future?
All of those things. Both because Bush and the Republicans have intentionally left Americans behind.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that. I'm using the LaHaye word there.
Yeah.
And they are incompetent. They're idiots. They're nincompoops. You got these academics who are these neocons who are the biggest fools I've ever seen. You know, they set the standard for smart people doing dumb things.
Yeah, I think the title of this new book that's coming out, Imperial Hubris, sums it up in two words.
It's true.
Yeah.
Tom, you're doing a wonderful job, and thanks for doing it.
Okay, and you're doing a great job there with opednews.com, Rob. And to our listeners, if you haven't checked out opednews.com, it's one of the better news sites on the web. Thanks for the call, Rob. Great to hear from you.
Okay,
this is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our number 1-866-889-8894, if you would like to participate in our discussions. Medicare is planning a lottery. Yes, a lottery. Let me tell you about that right after the break. And why now? Why a lottery? And, you know, what's the real story behind this story? This is a fascinating one. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. More than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Mechanics and flight attendants at Northwest Airlines are being warned not to hold informational pickets scheduled next week at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport or risk being fired. Members of the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association and Professional Flight Attendants Association planned to picket July 2nd. It was to be a show of protest against the company's growing practice of outsourcing aircraft maintenance to overseas contractors. Such a move, say the unions, presents a security risk. The airline responded with a letter saying any pickets with such a theme would be, quote, highly damaging to Northwest's business, unquote. More than a third of the maintenance on Northwest's fleet of planes is done in Singapore.
President Bush has been on the opposite side of labor unions on trade issues since his chief economic advisor endorsed the outsourcing of U.S. jobs overseas. And on Thursday, when Bush decided to sign another NAFTA-like free trade pact, President James Hoffa of the Teamsters Union had had enough, resigning from the White House Trade Advisory Panel. Hoffa blasted the panel as a, quote, sham process that only isolates the U.S. from Latin American allies.
New tensions between American and Canadian union members. This week, office workers in Canada declared their intent to set up their own union separate from the U.S.-based Office and Professional Employees International Union, with which they had been previously affiliated. The OPEIU, facing the loss of some 34,000 members, filed suit against the Canadians in a Florida court trying to stop the breakaway. This follows allegations of poaching made by the Canadian auto workers after the Detroit-based United Auto Workers opened up organizing drives at Canadian auto plants earlier this year.
With the help of federal mediators, negotiations are spinning again for striking Maytag workers in Des Moines. Following a two-week break, the United Auto Workers represents more than 1,500 home appliance manufacturing workers and says it won't resume production unless a new three-year contract protects employees' health care insurance and retirement benefits. Maytag responded to the strike by sending a letter to 700 previously laid-off employees asking them if they wanted to come back to work.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
Americans don't have to offshore jobs to lose them to competitors from other countries. A new report from the Pew Hispanic Center estimates that 29% of all new jobs created in the U.S. are going to non-U.S. citizens. This is a significant amount, especially since non-Americans currently make up less than 10% of the country's total workforce. Yet in general terms, wages earned by non-U.S. workers are slipping when compared to citizen workers, which suggests an element of exploitation at work.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
They seek him here.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 27 minutes before the hour. An interesting statistic. One-third of all the new jobs created in the last year, one-third, 29% actually is the exact number, 29% of all the jobs created in the last year have gone to non-U.S. citizens within the United States. These are not only among the most low-paying jobs available, but they're going to aliens. It's really quite remarkable. I mean, not to open that whole can of worms about immigration and illegal aliens and all that, but I just find that fascinating that fully a third of all the jobs created in the last year went to non-U.S. citizens. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Raymond in Cement City, Michigan's on the line. Hey, Raymond, what's up?
Well, I just thought I'd call in on top of that last call about are you more secure today than you were in all the different venues of your life.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first part of that should be is Bush deserted Americans. It's time to return to an administration that's for the security of the American public.
Now, you know, the cons would answer, particularly the neocons, you know, the guys who were the architects of the Iraq strategy, they would answer, Wolfie, Wolfowitz, Pearl, Rumsfeld, Cheney, they would answer by saying, well, because our way of life is so dependent upon oil, and because, as George H.W. Bush said, the American lifestyle is not negotiable, and because we want to continue to be able to have the average American driving a vehicle that you know, SUVs that get 10, 12, 15 miles per gallon, you know, we're not going to raise CAFE standards, things like that. Because the American lifestyle is so dependent upon oil, that by having a real significant military presence in the Middle East, and, of course, we had that in Saudi Arabia and in Kuwait after the Gulf War, and Osama declared war on us over having soldiers in Saudi Arabia. Bush just pulled them all out. But that was his demand back in 1996. You know, he said, 1997, I guess it was. He said, I'm going to attack America if you don't pull the soldiers, if you don't get the heathens off the Holy Land, right? So, anyhow, they would say that by nailing down Iraq, which is not only an oil-producing country, but it's right in the middle of the oil-producing, you know, one-third of the planet's oil basically comes out of the Middle East, right in the middle of the oil-producing region, that we're making America safer.
I would come back with the retort that he's made us less secure because he's destroyed the friendships and the international structures that protected that oil chain, and he's deserted us because he didn't stand up for building alternatives that would give us the capability to be free from that foreign oil situation. That he's deserted us because he hasn't stood up for America's social security system and health care system, that he's left everybody out to dry, but those who have, and he's put everybody in a position where they got to work 60 hours a week to stay alive. He's deserted them, and they're unable to take care of their kids because they have to work full time. I mean, that's what I'd say. If you want to be more secure, let's take care of our own and work together as a team, and not just turn into the American public into slaves for this ideological nonsense.
Yeah. Well, see, yes, I agree with you, Raymond. And you're missing the conservative agenda, which is very simply aristocracy. And you can't have aristocracy if you have a middle class that is large, strong, and politically active and politically aware. If you have people who have the leisure time to really pay attention to politics, if you have a free media, if you have a free press, you know, as Thomas Jefferson said, whenever the people are well informed, they can be trusted with their own in government. If you have well-informed people, a free press, a free media, not in the hands of just, you know, five or six small corporations, or very large corporations, rather, but five or six, you know, small number, then you can't have aristocracy if you have this large middle class. I mean, you know...
Yeah, I agree with you, and I've really been dismayed with the lack of interest that I see from a lot of people and the lack of... well, the attachment of some people have to this conservative agenda when it's not in their best interest. They don't see that they're the next ones to fall like the rest of a lot of the American people are falling in terms of their welfare and economic future.
Well, they've been indoctrinated. You know, it's not liberal. You know, it's John, at least George Bush is not a liberal, and he's not a baby killer, and he's not a, you know, and they've got their list of knots.
Yep.
Right, you know, and he's not a heathen, and he's not, you know, it's a what, you know, whatever the list is this week for, you know, actually I've got Newt Gingrich's word list around here someplace. I was looking at it this morning. I thought I had it real handy, but maybe not. No, I don't. Anyway, there's, you know, the list of words that conservatives are supposed to use whenever they describe liberals, and then the list of words that Newt Gingrich came up with that conservatives are supposed to use whenever they describe conservatives. And of course, they're adjectives, you know. But in any case, I think that people have, as a result of 15 years of media consolidation and media domination by the ultra-right wing, by the Uber-Reich, they have lost sight of the fact that there's a difference between a form of government and a form of economy, and that the purpose of an economy is to serve we the people, and the purpose of government is to serve we the people, and instead they've become inculcated with this idea, this strange idea, that the purpose of government is to serve those who drive the economy, regardless of its impact on the average person.
And the media, not only is it consolidated from the standpoint of information about or analysis or just challenging thought on the issues that affect your life and the environment and all the things that you know you would think would be important, but it's providing so much pablum that just draws people, and they live in the fantasy world of the media shows, and therefore their brain dead because they don't think outside the box. They got something to keep them satisfied for today, but they don't think about the impact of tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a real tragedy. It's a real tragedy. Raymond, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you there in Cement City, Michigan. And it really is. It's really a sad situation that so many people don't understand how, you know, the ideals upon which this country was founded, the the goal, you know, the purpose of government, you know, what does it mean to have a middle class? How can this be, how can this happen? Here we have Medicare is planning a lottery later this year for people with cancer, multiple sclerosis, and five other diseases. Out of the 450,000 people who are eligible to have their drug costs, with the exception of that donut hole of about $5,000, to have their drug costs paid for by Medicare, 450,000 people eligible, the government is going to let 50,000 of them win the lottery. You have to register, of course. And Health and Human Services Secretary Tommy Thompson estimated actually 500 to 600,000 Medicare recipients without prescription drug coverage are eligible. He said, quote, there'll be a lottery to be chosen as one of 50,000 lucky individuals, end quote. Lucky? Lucky? This is, you know, this is the government, and now here it gets even weirder. It gets even weirder. In order to run the lottery, are we going to have this lottery in which we decide which 50,000 people are going to get the medical care and services that Medicare will provide in 2006? Now, you know, trying it out. This is something, by the way, that Olympia Snowe, the Republican. Rhino, as the conservatives call it, a Republican in name only, the Republican senator from Maine demanded be tacked on to the Medicare bill, that there be an opportunity for some people to try this thing out immediately. And this is what's happening. But are we going to have civil servants do this? Are we going to have people in the Department of Health and Human Services? Are we going to have people in the Medicare Department coming up with who are going to be the 50,000 people? I mean, you know, what does it take to run a lottery? Is it that big a deal? What's it going to take? You know, you get the entry forms in the Department of Health and Human Services. Are we going to have people in the Medicare Department coming up with who are going to be the 50,000 people? I mean, you know, what does it take to run a lottery? Is it that big a deal? What's it going to take? You know, You get the entry forms and you pull them out of a hat or something. Well, no, we're not going to do it. We're not going to have it done by the government. Instead, we're going to pay a private corporation, Trailblazer Health Enterprises of South Carolina, $8.7 million to select 50,000 people to get the benefits. Why not just give the $8.7 million to some of those people as benefits? I mean, this is so bizarre. This is this religion of privatization. This religion that anything that the government can do, a corporation can do better. No, I'm sorry, not true. It's not true. There are many things that corporations do wonderfully. Corporations make money. God bless them. They drive what they are willing to pay for to provide to us. Through us, through our government, through our elected representatives. When we bring private companies into that, we end up spending more money. I mean, history has proven this over and over and over again. You end up spending more money because the private corporation has to make a profit. I mean, we're paying Halliburton to do things in Iraq. Their cost-plus contract, they make a profit, plus they get a guaranteed 7% off the top. You know, as Thomas Jefferson wrote, quote, society may give an exclusive right to the profits arising from them as an encouragement to men to pursue ideas which may produce utility. But this may or may not be done according to the will and the convenience of the society without complaint or claim from anybody. In other words, we can decide that there are things that we should send out, there are things that should be done. But the first question is society served by this? How is society served by this? And that is the goal of governance. And I just want to get back to this speech by Franklin Roosevelt, where he said, and just very straightforward, he talked about how out of this modern civilization, out of the industrialization of America, he said, out of this all of these combine to bring forward a new civilization with a new problem for those who sought to remain free. For out of this modern civilization, economic royalists carved new dynasties, new kingdoms were built upon concentration of control over material things and through new uses of corporations. He goes on to say, the whole structure of modern life was impressed into this royal service. There was no place among this royalty for many of our thousands of small businessmen and merchants who sought to make a worthy use of the American system of initiative and profit. They were no more free than the worker or the farmer. Even honest and progressive-minded men of wealth, aware of their obligation to their generation, could never know just where they fitted into this dynastic scheme of things. See, the conservative agenda right now is to take us back to the pre-1929 way that America was, where from about 1880 to about 1930, there essentially was no middle class other than the few people who lived on family farms. And they were vanishing fast starting in the 1890s. I mean, that was the middle class from 1776 up until the 1880s, was farmers. And as that middle class started to collapse, of course, that brought about the Grange movement in the 1870s, 1880s, and then the progressive and populist movements. The big split, actually the split out of the Republican Party in 1872. The Republican Party was the Reform Party, you know, prior to and during the Civil War. And in 1872, the progressives split with the Republicans, not the Democrats. The Democrats were the by that time, the party of established power, you know, the largely considered to be corrupt power. But within 10 years, by the 1880s, you had just massive and rampant corruption within the Republican administrations that reigned during the time of the Gilded Age and, you know, up till 1929, by and large. Teddy Roosevelt, of course, inserting himself into the race, through the race to a Democrat. But anyhow, back to Roosevelt's comment. He says, it was natural and perhaps human that the privileged princes of these new economic dynasties, thirsting for power, reached out for control over government itself. They created a new despotism and wrapped it in the robes of legal sanction. In its service, new mercenaries sought to regiment the people, their labor, and their property, and as a result, the average man once more confronts the problem that faced the Minuteman. And he goes on, you know, as an old English judge once said, necessitous men are not free men. Liberty requires opportunity to make a living decent according to the standard of the time, a living which gives man not only enough to live by, but something to live for. This speech was given just right after the Wagner Act was passed, which provided for unionization in the United States, which started the creation of the second great middle class in the United States, which the conservatives started taking apart when Ronald Reagan was elected. Tom Hartman with you, 10 minutes before the hour.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Out of His Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
Cut the energy you use while traveling without decreasing your mobility. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. One-third of all the energy used in the world powers transportation. Burning fossil fuels to move around contributes to pollution of the air, soil, and water, as well as global warming. Fortunately, there are things we can do to cut our travel-related energy use, according to Janet Sawin, a researcher for the World Watch Institute. She says one of the most important is the car you buy.
When people are going out shopping for a new vehicle, just try to look for the one that's most efficient. There are a number of hybrid vehicles, even some SUVs coming out on the market within the next year, or just buying smaller vehicles.
Sawin urges you to combine trips in your automobile and carpool if you can. She says public transportation is available in most cities of any size, and walking or biking is often a surprisingly pleasant way to travel. Sawin says government initiatives can also cut energy use in transportation. For example, cities throughout Europe and Japan have invested in commuter rail and bus systems for decades.
A number of major cities have very good public transportation systems, and then there are some cities, such as London, enacted what they call a congestion charge about a year ago, where they charge people for entering into the city of London, and that has encouraged a number of people to leave their cars at home and travel by bus or using the subway. A number of countries also have fairly high taxes on either gasoline or on cars.
The number of cars around the world is rising, as are the size and weight of vehicles and the distances people travel. Sawin says these factors increase energy consumption, making it even more important for people to try to get from here to there as efficiently as possible. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
You ain't seen nothing yet. We are going to return democracy to the United States of America. I'll start out with this Kerry guy. I think he has a lot of potential. I really do. I know a lot of progressives are very lukewarm about John Kerry. It's sort of like he's anybody but Bush. But this is a guy who stood up and spoke his mind. He spoke out about what he believed in back in the 70s when it was not only difficult to do and unpopular to do, but, I mean, the FBI was following people around. You get beat up. You get threatened. It was a very, very dangerous time to be speaking out like that. The America was very polarized during the Vietnam War. I remember well. I mean, I people marching in the streets, people getting arrested. It's very strange. And he had the courage of his convictions to say that. And according to the cons, and, you know, they keep good statistics, I guess, John Kerry has one of the most consistent voting records in the Senate. He's been there 20 years or more. Not only is it consistent, but it's the most liberal, more liberal than Ted Kennedy. Well, if that's the case, then he's my man. He's my man. He may be the best man in the Senate for the job. And I think having another JFK from Massachusetts as president would be a good thing for this country. I just want to wrap this thing up with Franklin Roosevelt. He says, against economic tyranny such as this, I mean, this, and see, here we are again. The American citizen could appeal only to the organized power of government, because really, what else is there? The collapse of 1929, he says, showed up the despotism for what it was. The election of 1932 was the people's mandate to end it. Under that mandate, it is being ended. And he says, and then he says, today we stand committed to the proposition that freedom is no half and half affair. If the average citizen is granted equal opportunity in the polling place, he must have equal opportunity in the marketplace. These economic royalists complain that we seek to overthrow the institutions of America. What they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power. Our allegiance to America requires the overthrow of this kind of power. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Mechanics and flight attendants at Northwest Airlines are being warned not to hold informational pickets scheduled next week at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport or risk being fired. Members of the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association and Professional Flight Attendants Association planned to picket July 2nd. It was to be a show of protest against the company's growing practice of outsourcing aircraft maintenance to overseas contractors. Such a move, say the unions, presents a security risk. The airline responded with a letter saying any pickets with such a theme would be, quote, highly damaging to Northwest's business, unquote. More than a third of the maintenance on Northwest's fleet of planes is done in Singapore.
President Bush has been on the opposite side of labor unions on trade issues since his chief economic advisor endorsed the outsourcing of U.S. jobs overseas. And on Thursday, when Bush decided to sign another NAFTA-like free trade pact, President James Hoffa of the Teamsters Union had had enough, resigning from the White House Trade Advisory Panel. Hoffa blasted the panel as a, quote, sham process that only isolates the U.S. from Latin American allies.
New tensions between American and Canadian union members. This week, office workers in Canada declared their intent to set up their own union separate from the U.S.-based Office and Professional Employees International Union, with which they had been previously affiliated. The OPEIU, facing the loss of some 34,000 members, filed suit against the Canadians in a Florida court trying to stop the breakaway. This follows allegations of poaching made by the Canadian auto workers after the Detroit-based United Auto Workers opened up organizing drives at Canadian auto plants earlier this year.
With the help of federal mediators, negotiations are spinning again for striking Maytag workers in Des Moines. Following a two-week break, the United Auto Workers represents more than 1,500 home appliance manufacturing workers and says it won't resume production unless a new three-year contract protects employees' health care insurance and retirement benefits. Maytag responded to the strike by sending a letter to 700 previously laid off employees asking them if they wanted to come back to work.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Americans don't have to offshore jobs to lose them to competitors from other countries. A new report from the Pew Hispanic Center estimates that 29% of all new jobs created in the U.S. are going to non-U.S. citizens. This is a significant amount, especially since non-Americans currently make up less than 10% of the country's total workforce. Yet in general terms, wages earned by non-U.S. workers are slipping when compared to citizen workers, which suggests an element of exploitation at work.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Do big-time CEOs, no matter how compassionate and cuddly they might be personally, have to be SOBs on the job? Yes, says the conventional wisdom of greater corporate world. The bottom line dictates that wages and benefits be slashed and that offshoring be pursued with a vengeance. It's not personal, just business. Look ye to Walmart, boom the market gods, directing CEOs to follow the anti-labor, low-wage, no-benefit, move-it-all-to-China ethic of this giant. The gods decree that no one can outcompete Walmart, so best to imitate the beast. Apparently, Jim Senegal has been going to the wrong church. He's CEO of Costco, the profitable warehouse club retailer that's fast-growing across the country. He takes a shockingly heretical view of his job, boasting of his company's fair treatment of employees. We pay much better than Walmart, Senegal says. That's not altruism, it's good business. Indeed, Costco's pay is much, much, much better. A full-time Costco clerk or warehouse worker earns more than $41,000 a year, plus getting terrific health care coverage. Walmart workers barely get a third of that pay, plus a lousy health care plan. Costco even has unions. Yet Costco's labor costs are only about half of Walmart's. How's that possible? One reason is that Costco workers feel valued, which adds enormously to their productivity, and they don't leave. Employee turnover is a tiny fraction of Walmart's rapidly revolving door. Another thing Senegal rejects is offshoring. Quote, we could move some operations to Bangladesh or somewhere, but what kind of message would that send to our employees? Not a good one, I think. This is Jim Hightower saying, while Walmart makes twice as much profit as Costco, Senegal believes it's better business to make a nice profit, but not a killing, and to invest more in Costco's 92,000 workers.
You think I'd maybe had some Bush's phases, maybe, please. I'm a Carrier air conditioner. Isolation lets me focus and keep you comfy. Shoe Doug.
For unmatched expertise, Carrier stands alone. Our air conditioners with Purion refrigerant are energy efficient and environmentally sound. No wonder Carrier's trusted in more homes than any other brand. For a limited time, save up to $1,000 on select Carrier systems. Call 1-800-CARRIER for a dealer near you. Some restrictions apply. See participating dealer for details. Carrier, turn to the experts.
I am Gunnery Sergeant R. Lee Ermey, United States Marine Corps. While our armed forces defend our freedom, their families shoulder household duties and emergencies alone. To help the veterans of foreign wars and Vermont, American brand Bits and Blades have created the Unmet Needs Program.
Rufus Forrest here, VFW Senior Administrator. Please support the Unmet Needs Program by purchasing Vermont American Bits and Blades. A portion of each purchase goes to help families.
Visit unmetneeds.com and buy Vermont American brand Bits and Blades. Thank you and Semper Fi. Hoorah!
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour. The United States is spent now on the war in Iraq. $126 billion. Ultimately, every American family is going to have to pay $3,415 for that. Now, that's without interest. If you consider that our children and our grandchildren are going to pay for it, it's going to be exponentially larger. As of June 16th, before yesterday's nationwide attacks that killed over 100 Iraqis, up to 11,300 Iraqi civilians and 6,300 Iraqi soldiers or insurgents were killed. The death toll among coalition troops, close to 1,000, 952, 853 of them Americans, between 50 and 90 civilian contractors and missionaries, and 30 journalists have also been killed. That's altogether well over 1,000 on our side, well over 17,000 on their side, as it were. Another $25 billion is expected to be spent on this. The $126 billion is just, you know, what's been spent so far. That annual cost is enough to provide health care at the current, you know, with the current inefficient, clunky system that Congress and the states have cobbled together between Medicare, Medicaid, let's not negotiate drug prices, using private health insurance companies that are making record profits, private hospitals that are, you know, enriching Bill Frist and his family. Even at that, the amount that we spent in Iraq would be enough to provide health insurance for half of the 43 million Americans who have no medical insurance. Of course, with a single-payer health care system, if we were simply to make Medicare available to everybody in the United States and allow Medicare to negotiate drug prices and provide a small but reasonable deductible for most procedures so that people are encouraged not to abuse the system, it could be provided for actually less money than we're spending right now. We can insure everybody in America for less money than we're spending right now. This is, you know, these are the issues of our future. These are the issues of the commons. These are the issues that, you know, what kind of America do we want to be living in? What kind of nation do we want to be? The LA Unified School District, for example, has made the national news media. But a number of schools in Los Angeles, because of the budget cuts that have echoed down from the Bush tax cuts. See, most states index their state taxes to federal taxes. Federal taxes go down, state taxes go down. Here in Vermont, it's probably the most radically indexed, right, or the most overtly. I'm not sure it's the most. There's probably other states that are just like us. But basically, you calculate your federal tax, and then one quarter of whatever that is, you pay as state tax. So if there's a federal tax cut, then the state has less revenue, and they have no say over that unless they want to raise that 25% to 28% or something like that, or they've got to cut back. And in California, they've been cutting back on services like crazy, including public schools. And so now the schools are sending out letters principals of schools are sending out letters to parents. Help us support the debating society. Although most of, actually back then in the 50s and 60s, most of it was paid for locally. But, you know, particularly things like band, you know, uniforms, instruments. They can. Well, now the schools are sending fundraising letters asking not for field trips or band uniforms, but for cleaning supplies. Cleaning supplies. A June 14 letter from Hamlin Street principal Betsy Warren asked parents to donate to the school's discretionary fund to make up a $50 per student shortfall. Warren, who said the school needs money for AIDS, cleaning supplies, and after-school care. The district has cut $550 million from its budget this year. Principals like Warren are also struggling with cuts to specialized state funds. Do we want public education in the United States or not? The cons clearly do not. And I don't mean that as like, you know, taking some sort of cheap shot. No, I mean, seriously, they believe that, education should be privatized, that organizations like Chris Whittle's Education One or whatever it's called, that you know, private corporations should be providing education. The government should pay for it, of course, with vouchers. Oddly, the vouchers that have been proposed in most of these systems have been for $2,000 or $3,000 per year, yet the average cost to educate a child in the United States is around $5,600 a year, which means that the vouchers are basically discounts for people who can afford to send their children to private schools, tax-subsidized discounts for private schools. And I have some knowledge of this. I'm the president of the board of directors of a private school. And for those parents who cannot afford the difference between the $2,000 or $3,000 of the voucher and the, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 annual tuition of the private school, for those parents, the voucher is just a piece of paper that they can, you know, wrap fish with. See, this is the once you understand just very clearly. I mean, let's not mince words. That the cons are really and truly believe that things like public education, Social Security, Medicare, are socialism. That the government has no business providing these things. That if somebody wants their kid to get an education, it is their problem. If somebody wants to get health care, it's their problem. If somebody's concerned about their old age retirement, they should have been paying attention when they were young and saving. And I think that, you know, in a society where the vast majority of people are in solidly in a middle class or upper middle class situation, you could actually sort of start to make those arguments. And they would seem to be logical. I mean, when the cons, particularly on the radio, start talking about this stuff, you know, for a lot of people who are making $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 a year, you know, the high end of the middle class, yeah, that sounds logical. That sounds reasonable. People, you know, personal responsibility. What they don't realize is that the only reason that they can make $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 a year, the only reason that there is an upper end to the middle class in the United States, or combined income with two people working, even $50,000, $60,000, whatever, is because we are providing an educated workforce for America. It's because we're providing socialized streets and socialized fire departments and socialized police services. Because, you know, the middle class is not a normal thing. I mean, this is the thing that people just don't get. That people, you know, it's economics 101. Any economist can tell you this. But the average person doesn't realize it, that normally there is no middle class. Normally, you have a small number of very wealthy people who own everything, and you've got a whole lot of people who are working all day and own very little or nothing. And in that kind of a situation, in Dickensian England, you know, the world of Scrooge Marley and Bob Cratchit, to say, well, you should just save for your own retirement. You should be able to pay for your own medical services. What's wrong with you? Why can't you put your kids through school? Remember Bob Marley? Trying to save Tiny Tim's life? Trying to figure out where he was going to get the money to buy the Christmas dinner for his family, much less gifts. People forget that that was the norm. That is the conservative vision. And I don't say that, you know, with malice or to say, gee, aren't these guys evil? They really believe that that is actually the most stable form of government and the most stable form of economy, to have a small, well-heeled, well-educated aristocracy that subscribes to the notion of noblesse oblige, the obligation of the nobility to look after everybody else, to make sure that society works well, and to have a large group of people who are desperately poor but willing to work and willing to maintain the lifestyle of that upper class. It's called social overhead. It's what anthropologists refer to as social overhead. The only way you can have anything beyond just, you know, people taking care of their own needs is for people to take care of their own needs plus create a little extra, and that little extra goes into what's called social overhead. What it goes into the big institutions. It's one of the reasons why tribal people, hunting, gathering people, typically work an average of 2 hours a day. That's it. They spend the rest of the time sitting, talking, playing with their kids, singing songs. No, seriously. And this is very well documented. The reason why, there's no social overhead. They're not building cathedrals. They're not maintaining a huge edifice. They don't have rich among them and poor among them. There's no social overhead. Well, obviously, we can't do that. We're not tribal people any longer. But what we can do is we can say, we want to live, we know it's possible because we've done it. We did it in the United States from the late 1930s through the early 1980s. We know it's possible to live in a country where a single wage earner in a family can put their kids through school, can pay for medical expenses, can have a retirement, can have a decent job. It's this is not rocket science, but it's the opposite of the conservative agenda. Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Research from the Medical College of Wisconsin highlights a workplace ailment related to people who work with vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
What makes me treat you the way I do? Gee, baby, ain't I good to you?
And welcome back. Tom Hartman
There's
here with you.
There's nothing in the world too good for a girl that's good and true.
Yes. 25 minutes past the hour. The head of the Teamsters Union. Here's the question: Do we really want to have a middle class in America? I mean, is it worth engaging in what the conservatives would call socialism? I don't call it socialism, by the way. Socialism, in my dictionary, is when government controls the means of production and distribution, which means that the government owns all the corporations, and that's, you know. But it's, I thought it was really revealing the other day when Henry Kissinger made the point as a slam on Democrats. You know, Henry Kissinger has been a partisan Republican for a long, long time. And by the way, the video, the DVD that you can pick up from Amazon, I think, for like $15 and probably find it on eBay for less than that. Other places, The Trials of Henry Kissinger, the movie, is really amazing. You got to see this thing. It's amazing. The Trials of Henry Kissinger. It's an hour and a half documentary on the life of Henry Kissinger. But when Kissinger the other day said, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but something very close to this, that the Republicans are interested in creating the uniquely American style of democracy, whereas Democrats are more interested in creating an European style of democracy. Now, he meant that as a slam on Democrats. It was sort of like saying John Kerry looks French. Oh, the Democrats aren't American. But the reality is, having lived in Europe for a year, I think I can speak with some authority about this, and having, you know, visited Europe regularly, at least once a year, very often several times a year. I mean, for example, this fall I'm speaking at Oxford University in England. I'll be in Greece in November. I'll be at Oxford in September. And I've been going to Europe regularly for 25 years, at least, usually in the course of doing business. And I've had European business partners. And I can tell you that the European notion of democracy, they don't call it socialism, but the European notion of democracy is very much in line with Jefferson's idea of democracy, with the founders' ideals of democracy, and as Kissinger said, very inconsistent with George W. Bush's vision, or for that matter, the vision, if you want to go back to the early days, the vision of the robber barons during the Gilded Age, the vision of the Whigs in the 1830s, 1840s, the vision of many of the Federalists. I mean, this was the battle between Jefferson and Adams. Adams, the year he died, he wrote a letter to Thomas Jefferson in which he said essentially that he was convinced that democracy could not work, that America was doomed, that democracy could not work because he had come to conclude that only aristocracy would be a stable form of government. He had always, his entire life, really held that notion. Alexander Hamilton had the courage, at least, to say it out loud on the first day of the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia in the summer of 1787, for which Hamilton was harassed for the rest of his life. But Adams was willing to say it in a letter to Jefferson, you know, just come right out and say it, that aristocracy, a small, wealthy, powerful class, and then a large, desperate working class, but no middle class, was more stable than having a middle class where you just couldn't trust the people because they would have the power. And Jefferson, of course, disagreed with them. Do you think we ought to have a middle class in America? What are your thoughts on the future of it? 1-866-889-8894, our number. Tom Hartman with you, 29 minutes past the hour.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Mechanics and flight attendants at Northwest Airlines are being warned not to hold informational pickets scheduled next week at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport or risk being fired. Members of the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association and Professional Flight Attendants Association plan to picket July 2nd. It was to be a show of protest against the company's growing practice of outsourcing aircraft maintenance to overseas contractors. Such a move, say the unions, presents a security risk. The airline responded with a letter saying any pickets with such a theme would be, quote, highly damaging to Northwest's business, unquote. More than a third of the maintenance on Northwest's fleet of planes is done in Singapore.
President Bush has been on the opposite side of labor unions on trade issues since his chief economic advisor endorsed the outsourcing of U.S. jobs overseas. And on Thursday, when Bush decided to sign another NAFTA-like free trade pact, President James Hoffa of the Teamsters Union had had enough, resigning from the White House Trade Advisory Panel. Hoffa endorsed the outsourcing of U.S. jobs overseas. And on Thursday, when Bush decided to sign another NAFTA-like free trade pact, President James Hoffa of the Teamsters Union had had enough, resigning from the White House Trade Advisory Panel. Hoffa blasted the panel as a, quote, sham process that only isolates the U.S. from Latin American allies.
New tensions between American and Canadian union members. This week, office workers in Canada declared their intent to set up their own union separate from the U.S.-based Office and Professional Employees International Union, with which they had been previously affiliated. The OPEIU, facing the loss of some 34,000 members, filed suit against the Canadians in a Florida court trying to stop the breakaway. This follows allegations of poaching made by the Canadian auto workers after the Detroit-based United Auto Workers opened up organizing drives at Canadian auto plants earlier this year.
With the help of federal mediators, negotiations are spinning again for striking Maytag workers in Des Moines following a 2-week
from other countries. A new report from the Pew Hispanic Center estimates that 29% of all new jobs created in the U.S. are going to non-U.S. citizens. This is a significant amount, especially since non-Americans currently make up less than 10% of the country's total workforce. Yet in general terms, wages earned by non-U.S. workers are slipping when compared to citizen workers, which suggests an element of exploitation at work.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Come all you good workers. Come all you good workers. Good news to you, I'll tell of how the good old union has come in.
Which side are you on? 1-866-889-8894. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman here with you. Yeah, ultimately that comes to be the question. You know, George W. Bush echoing essentially the thinking of John Adams.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
1-866-889-8894. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman here with you. Yeah, ultimately that comes to be the question. You know, George W. Bush echoing essentially the thinking of John Adams.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
Yep. Yep. The head of the Teamsters Union, speaking of the union movement, the head of the Teamsters Union said he resigned on Thursday, this Jimmy Hoffa Jr., President W., to lend legitimacy to a sham process in which our views, and those of other important U.S. constituencies are not respected. Your approach to trade and economic integration only further isolates our nation from the very countries with whom we seek to trade. Labor provisions. The failure to include labor provisions. So, you know, that's kind of the bad news that National Union President Andrew Stern. Workers are growing so fast in cleaning, food service, laundry, transportation, maintenance, and anything else that can be contracted out in schools, universities, government, office buildings, hospitals, and nursing homes that in a few years they will overtake Walmart in size. Now, Walmart, you will remember, is America's largest corporation that hasn't gone to the Grand Cayman Islands to reincorporate. Walmart is the single largest employer in the United States. The combined wealth of the five heirs to the Walton family is greater than that of Bill Gates. In aggregate, these five heirs of Sam Walton are the richest people in the United States. But here, these three companies that Stern, the president of the Service International, Service Employees International, SEIU, has identified Andrew Stern. These three companies are going to, he says, within a few years, they'll be bigger than, they'll overtake Walmart in size. They're doing it jointly with a couple of other unions, the Union of Needle Trades, the Industrial and Textile Employees, which represents garment and laundry workers, Hotel Employees and Restaurant Employees International Union. Now, here's the story within the story. You run a trade deficit. You import lots and lots and lots of cheap stuff from China or lots and lots of oil from Saudi Arabia. And if you don't export to China and to Saudi Arabia an equal amount of something, you end up owing them money. It's called a trade deficit. See, there are two deficits. Most people, you know, don't really pay that much attention. What's the deficit? Well, the deficit is $400 billion. What does that mean? Well, that's the deficit, the budget deficit, is how much money that we're going to have to borrow from our children and our grandchildren to pay for the stuff that we're doing today. And that's another topic. But the trade deficit is how much more we bought than we spent. And the United States ran essentially a trade surplus from its founding until the 1980s when trickle-down economics started. And it was early in the 1980s that we first began running a trade deficit rather than a trade surplus. And we have been more or less ever since then. So here's the story within the story. These three companies that are poised to overtake Walmart in terms of their size and power in the United States. These three companies that the SEIU is going to go after to unionize. Sodexo, Compass Group, and Aramark. Aramark. I'm not Aramark. I assume is how it's pronounced. Only one of those three companies is actually an American-owned company. Why? Because we have spent so much. We have bought so much more than we have sold. We give these countries dollars, and they can only use those dollars here ultimately. So what do? They buy our companies. They buy America. Sodexo is owned by a French, it's a French company. Compass Group is a British company. The only one of these three companies is Aramark, the one that you can't pronounce. It's based in Philadelphia. And I frankly don't know. Maybe they're based, you know, maybe as a corporation they're in the Grand Caymans. Who knows? Wouldn't surprise me. But it's the only so-called American company of the three. This is the result. That is the direct result of trade policy. And so you have trade policy. So here we have Jimmy Hoffa saying to George Bush, who he supported in the 2000 election and worked aggressively to get elected, that he's no longer going to be a part of a sham program. Because our trade policies are destroying labor. Well, our trade policies are also selling out America. The conservative trade policies, and I include in that category, by the way, Bill Clinton as an economic conservative. Conservative trade policies have led to the selling off of America. These three companies combined have 330,000 non-union workers. Tom Woodruff, an SEIU executive vice president who's coordinating the campaign, said the three unions expect to spend $10 million in the next 18 months to do this. He says, we've got to stop them from competing in a race to the bottom. See, that's what's happening. It used to be when we had a trade surplus, we were exporting more than we were importing. Before Chrysler got bought out by a German company because they had so many extra dollars, they didn't know what to do, so they bought Chrysler. Used to be that General Motors, the largest employer in the United States, set the ceiling for wages. And most companies, if they, you know, if people say, hey, you know, I can always go to work at GM for whatever. I mean, back when I was a kid, it was, I think it was around, you know, $12, $13, $14 an hour, which in today's dollars would probably be the equivalent of probably around $23, $24, $25 an hour, plus health insurance, plus a pension, plus a certain number of days off, and, you know, just, hey, it's the middle class. Why? Because General Motors was unionized. General Motors was the standard against which companies measured themselves. And that's why, even though only about 35% of Americans were ever unionized at the peak of the union movement, which was in the mid 40s, 1947, that only about a third of Americans were unionized. Nonetheless, those unionized Americans set the standard for the rest of America. Well, now what we have. Now the unionization is down to around 7, 8, 9, 11%, depending on whose numbers you're looking at and what industries you're looking at. Now we've got this race to the bottom, and Walmart, the largest employer in the United States, replaced General Motors as the largest employer. They're aggressively anti-union. They will fire you. They will go out of their way to destroy you if they figure out that you're trying to create a union within a Walmart. They keep the unions out. And it truly is a race to the bottom. And so, as Tom Woodruff, the SEIU executive vice president, said, we've got to stop them from competing in a race to the bottom. It's huge when you think about it. These are jobs. These are the jobs that are going to be left in our economy. Being maids, being home health care workers, cleaning hotels, being busboys Well, these are the jobs. I mean, this is the economy that the cons are creating by offshoring our manufacturing. And this is going to be the union's last stand. 15 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you would like to be on the program. What are your thoughts on this? Chris in Los Alamos, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, like really, really, really love your program. Just wanted to tell you that.
Thank you.
So we got the largest employer here in northern New Mexico is Los Alamos National Laboratory, where they invented the atomic bomb. And pretty much it's a company town here, and they just outsourced everything in terms of food service to Armac.
Oh, really?
And I just, I want to tell you that the quality of everything has completely gone down. The people are demoralized that work here, and it's truly impressive. And I don't know where this company is based, but I will tell you.
Philadelphia.
Well, that's what they say, but, you know, I hear a lot of rumors that you're right. It's like more like Bermuda or the Cayman Islands, and it would be an interesting check on that. But it is truly fascinating how horrible the services become, how pathetic the morale has become, and that's pretty much what I just wanted to let you know. And that's our premier nuclear research facility.
That's interesting. And that's because this company, presumably the people who were doing your food service at Los Alamos Nuclear Labs before were employees of the nuclear lab, right? They were employed by the same people as the scientists and as the engineers and as the people building bombs and whatnot, and they had some benefits and they had reasonable pay and all that sort of thing,
and job security and fundamentally they were respected and people were friends of each other and what have you, and they turned around and outsourced this thing, and everything has completely gone to hell.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the conservative vision of America. I mean, you know, this is George W. Bush's America. This is Ronald Reagan's America. This is the America that Russell Kirk envisioned in 1953 when he wrote The Conservative Vision, The Conservative Mind. Chris, thanks for the call.
Well, thank you. Bye.
Yeah. Good point. It's a good story. Here you are. I mean, So, Chris, you might want to let those folks know that SEIU, Service Employees International Union, is going to be trying to unionize them. And won't that be interesting? Won't that be very, very interesting? The Bush presidency, by the way, a couple of people have emailed me about the website I gave out the other day. It's georgewbush.org for the parody website on George W. It looks just like Bush's campaign site, only it tells a slightly different story than you get on other sites, but georgewbush.org. This from the Bush presidency, from another website. Actually, I don't have the URL for this website. I'll have to get it and share it with you. But after Bush, the deluge. In the face of huge increases in spending, the war in Iraq, the Medicare drug program, the proposed energy bill, President Bush has engineered tax cuts in all 3 years. Okay, we've got 3 years of tax cuts and 3 years of his presidency. Now he wants to have tax cuts in his fourth year. What does he want to cut? He wants to cut taxes on estates, the estate tax, the inheritance tax on estates that are valued at more than $1 million. Right now it begins at that. If your estate is worth less than $1 million, it's not taxed at all. And he wants to cut that out, so when his father dies, he'll be able to inherit hundreds of millions of dollars without paying any tax. And he wants to eliminate all the taxes on investment income. This is turning on its head progressive taxation, turning it absolutely on its head, so that those people who sit by the pool all day waiting for their dividend check to come pay no taxes at all. Today they only pay 15% now, thanks to this last tax cut. And everybody else pays everything. Tom Hartman with you, 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely, because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
I'm Sarah Turner of the Workers' Independent News Service, bringing you today's feature story. New York City Council members joined Reverend Al Sharpton this week to protest the city's unbelievable 51% unemployment rate for black men. Rebecca Miles reports.
stopping downtown traffic, breaking through barricades and heckling cops, Reverend Al Sharpton and 22 council members marched protesting unemployment in their communities. The Council of the City of New York Black, Latino, and Asian Caucus and hundreds of supporters strung arms together to walk from Ground Zero and walk around City Hall.
And blue flag, Governor, protect it! George Bush, you can't tell us to lift ourselves up by our bootstraps when you left us standing in our underwear!
Al Sharpton spoke at the rally and questioned how Mayor Bloomberg could invite the Republican National Convention to New York when half the city's black men were out of work.
Today is just the beginning. We're coming out every week by the hundred. We're going to construction sites where people have jobs. They don't even live in New York. We're going to real estate offices. We're going to show where the jobs are. We need millions of dollars in public funds to deal with the job crisis. We need every contractor.
Today's march will kick off a series of marches throughout the summer, and the caucus has been busy lobbying for a $20 million initiative in the 205 budget to provide programs for job development, placement, and training. Half of the $20 million budget would come from the City Council support, and half from Mayor Bloomberg's office. The State Council meeting is today. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles reporting from New York.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Warren Buffett in Fortune magazine says as a result of conservative economic trade policies that started with the Reagan administration, we first started running a trade deficit in 1983, that a total of 5% that's 1/20th. One out of every 20 businesses. 5% of all the assets in America are now owned by foreign corporations or foreign individuals. That's just absolutely remarkable. And the hugest spike has occurred in the last 5 years, basically since Clinton signed NAFTA and GATT. And Bush is going right along with it. And I frankly, I'll be fascinated to look at Clinton's autobiography and see how he justifies that. And I'm sure, you know, well, he's a DLC Democrat. He's, you know, well, it's a good thing, you know, we got to do this. It's a build trade and so forth. They got all the talking points down, but, you know, it might as well be, you know, multimillionaire Rush Limbaugh as multimillionaire Bill Clinton or something. In their first budget in April 2001, the Bush administration projected a $334 billion surplus for 2003 and a $5.6 trillion surplus 10 years out. That forecast, which assumed that there could be no such thing as an economic downturn, greased the skids for the $1.35 trillion 2001 tax cut. Then came 9/11 and the recession. And in February of 2002, the administration projected a deficit of only $80 billion for 2003 and a budget balanced by 2004. Based on that fiction, they sold another tax cut of $30 billion. A year later, in early 2003, the Bush camp predicted a deficit of $300 billion. Now it's at $500 billion. They want another tax cut. It's destroying our country. It's just plain old flat out destroying our country. Thanks to Adam Cohen for engineering our show today. Thanks to Louise for producing it. And good luck, Adam, on your new job. He's off to a new adventure. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. Thanks to Ben for WhiteRoseSociety.org with our archives and also a new stream, new web stream we've got. Thanks to the folks at Cable Radio Network. Thanks to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics, to the folks in our chat room, and to you for listening. See you next week. This is Tom Hartman. Happy Friday. Shabbat Shalom.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist